Welcome to the Bond Brain. And now, without further ado, here's your host, Bud West.
So to further my look into the Bond super skill of being multilingual, 007, of course, we all know has multiple languages in his repertoire, as we've seen throughout the films. I personally speak just one language, and that is English. So I thought it would be better to hear from someone who speaks two languages, at least two languages. So I would like to welcome to the Bond Brain from the James Bond Complex. He's Intrepid 007 on Instagram. He's a fellow administrator of the Bond Community Cigar Lounge and master of all he surveys. All right, I made up that last one. Emery Cormier, welcome to the Bond Brain, pal.
Thanks very much, Bud. That's what a great intro. It's nice to hear all those accolades all strung together.
Hey, you take on a lot, man. You get credit when you do that.
I do. Well, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be. I don't think I've been on you've been on my show in the past, and you've been on the Bond Complex. I don't think I've ever been on your show.
Have I come on the Bond Complex? I don't know.
You were on the Intrepid 007 podcast back in the day. I don't know if you've been.
Yes.
Well, I haven't been on the Bond Complex yet.
If I was, I think it predated you.
Possibly. Or it was a No Time to Die thing. I know we had so many guests that were on that. But anyway,
we had all that.
Yeah.
Right. And Bond Community Cigar Lounge events and the like. Mm-hmm. So I brought on Emery here because he is a multilingual individual, and I know you speak English, I know you speak French, and it's just the two, correct?
It's just the two. I picked up a little couple of Spanish phrases just for fun a couple of years ago, but I'm fluent in both English and French.
And so when did you start that learning process? And wait a minute, what's your primary language is a better question.
My mother tongue or my primary language is English. But okay. Because of where I grew up, the French portion of it was there was no way around it. I had to learn how to speak French because I'm from Quebec, specifically just the outskirts of Montreal. But the province of Quebec is in its entirety is a 90% Francophone speaking province. So while I probably could have gotten away with just coasting through English schools with a little bit of French, it was in my best interest to become fully fluent in French at a young age. So I started learning French at 4 or 5 years old.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, probably a much easier learn at that age than an adult, though it's not inconceivable that an adult could later in life pick up a second language. But
no, but French is a difficult language too because of verb conjugations and things like that you don't have to do in English, and there's a lot of things that don't translate necessarily the same. Sentence structure isn't the same and things like that. So it's easier to learn French younger than it is older. But for me, it was a matter of survival. There was, if I didn't learn proper French, I would have probably have to move from my home province and move somewhere more, more Anglophone, more English.
Yeah. I mean, there's the definite benefit for anyone in a multilingual situation that it actually opens up a lot of more professional opportunities for you because
absolutely
you can work in additional places. So, yeah, I can certainly see that. Now, were your parents bilingual?
Not as much. No. My parents kind of lucked out in that when they grew up. Well, I mean, in the same area as me, there was more Anglophone speaking communities, and there was maybe just a little bit more of an opportunity to work in English in some respects, because there were still some companies that were still working primarily in English. And this was before some language reforms happened in the province that kind of put some restrictions on working only in English. My mother doesn't really speak a lot of French. My father, surprisingly enough, with a last name like Cormier and being a very French last name, his French wasn't as good at all. But he was working for a doctor at the time whose clientele was primarily the rich Anglophone community of Montreal. So he didn't need French either until much later in life. So my parents aren't necessarily bilingual at all. And their parents, well, actually my father is from New Brunswick. My grandfather is from New Brunswick, I should say, on my father's side, and he would have been perfectly bilingual as well, but it didn't necessarily pass down to his children for whatever reason.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, my wife's younger brother is kind of like that. His father is, they're different fathers, and his father is Hispanic. And I used to think it was funny when he was very young when I first started dating her, and you know, his father would come in the house and speak to her younger brother, who was probably 8 or 9 at the time, in Spanish, and her brother would answer in English. And now, as a grown man, I mean he's in his 30s, you know, like, he doesn't understand any Spanish at all, and I give him a hard time about it because his last name's Sanchez. I'm like, how can you not know how to speak Spanish with the last name Sanchez? But
yeah,
but it's just, you have to, I guess you have to keep at it now. So you have the opportunity to speak both languages frequently, correct?
Absolutely, okay. Absolutely.
So how about your wife, your kids?
So my wife is French-Canadian and primarily Francophone, but she studied languages. She studied music and languages in college. And so she learned English relatively young age to probably a little bit later than I learned French, but English is easier to learn for a Francophone than the opposite. So she learned... pretty early on. So she's very fluent. I mean, there's no issues for her English or French. It's, I mean, her French is impeccable and her English is almost as good as mine. And mine is just, you know, so, but,
you make perfect sense to me. Yeah,
absolutely. But I mean, I'm Anglophone, but I'm not as, you know, I'm not as expressive and I'm not as, well-versed as, say, like Edgar from the James Bond complex in English. I mean, he's a journalist. He's a little bit more eloquent. I'm a little more basic, I should say.
Okay.
but my kids are all completely bilingual. And, you know, my oldest will probably speak English more than the other two for whatever reason. But, I mean, like, he doesn't even have to try at school. I mean, he's getting 90s in English, and my younger son is getting 90s in English. My youngest isn't, they don't get English classes this early, because I've moved from Montreal to a more Francophone speaking area of the province. So I actually did the opposite of a lot of people from my generation. Wow. And, you know, rather than tough it out, learn French better and stay, they moved west to places like Toronto and Vancouver and places that are completely Anglophone, where I said, no, I'm going the other way, to be halfway between my parents and my wife's parents. So we're going further east where there's less of an Anglophone community. So there was the option of putting my kids into English school would have been busing them a half hour out of town to go to a different school, whereas their schools are literally 10 minutes away at most. So the advantage was putting them in French school and then having excellent grades in English, because they're completely bilingual. They speak better English most of the time than some of the teachers that are teaching them English. So my kids are perfectly bilingual, and they don't know how to categorize themselves, whether they're English or French. They just don't know. They're bilingual.
They just, yeah. Now, how about, and this is they say a skill that not everyone who is multilingual can do easily, but how about just flipping back and forth between languages without hesitation? Like, how difficult is that?
It's not, for me, it's not difficult at all, because I do it day to day. I mean, I've been doing some sort of either customer relations or customer service job for the last 20 years almost. So it's, when you're doing it here, you don't really have a choice but to speak both languages. So I flip back and forth on a daily basis, and I flip back and forth at home too, because I'll start talking to my wife in French and finish my sentence in English, or I'll, you know, veer off into English. And so the conversation is always flipping, and sometimes I don't even know what language I'm thinking in anymore, because it's sometimes it's, I'll be speaking in French and then I'll start counting in English. Because my brain just likes, it's easier to count in English, but it's easier to speak French right now. So the flip is really easy to do.
Yeah, I noticed that with a lady I worked with for many years, I still do, and she's from Vietnam. And though her sons were born here, I would hear her on the phone, and she would very often just flip back and forth between Vietnamese and English. Mm-hmm. And I asked her one time why she did that, and she said, well, the boys don't always understand all of it.
Right.
You know, growing up in a, you know, predominantly English-speaking world. I can understand the difficulty of learning. I took 4 years of French in high school. I mean, I can't speak a word of it. I can count to three and say goodbye. Yeah, right. Au revoir. Right. But that's about it. You know, I really can't communicate through any of it. Now, Has it opened doors for you anywhere, do you feel?
Well, it does, because of the move I made from Montreal to Quebec City, there's less Anglophones available to work at jobs in Quebec City. So basically any job that I would have applied for was looking for someone who was bilingual. They were happy to have me because they wanted someone to speak English. And now I work for the federal government. So the fact that I'm bilingual is an absolute asset. So they're very happy with that. But like I said, I could have been content to say, I don't want to speak French. I can go live in a bigger city in a different part of the world and just speak English because I'm an Anglophone. But the fact that I speak both does give me an advantage where I'm living. So yeah, I've had some better opportunities because I'm bilingual.
Right. So now I would assume your children also have French classes, although they probably just call it language or something along those lines. How well do they do in that?
My kids, I'm lucky to have some really smart kids because they've been doing pretty well in that respect. I think one of the downsides for them is that they watch TV mostly in English. We decided not to get cable for whatever reason. So most of the time, if they're watching TV, they're watching in English. So maybe they miss out a little bit on that. But I mean, so far their grades are impeccable. And like I said earlier, French is such a hard language to perform in. I mean, my French grades were never super great. My wife has to correct some of my email sometimes when I send stuff out just to make sure. But I mean, their French is impeccable because they're learning primarily in French. So they get very little English and they get everything is taught to them in French. So they kind of have to perform better in French. And then on the flip side, the English is so easy for them. Just because I don't want to say the quality of education in English is poorer, but their quality of the teaching that they get in English is not the same quality as you would get in an English school teaching English or literature or whatever. It's not the equivalent. So if you go to a French school and you're taking an English literature class, it's not going to be the same English lit class as you would get in an English school. Just because, you know, in the English school, you'd be getting English all day, every day, and then one French class, whereas this is, you know, you get the opposite. So I think the English classes are a little easier for them because they're getting basic English, but they're also consuming everything in English anyway. So there's that advantage too, because English is a little bit easier to learn. And I think that most of the world and probably most of your listeners and my listeners will kind of agree that, you know, they don't know the difference between learning a different first language. You know, English is the first language that they learned, and it's a pretty easy language compared to, you know, Spanish and French and Italian kind of all have similarities. So it's a little bit different. There's things that are harder, and then the education side of it is a little bit nuanced here.
Right. Now, does it get tougher when they get older? Because I have a buddy of mine, he moved to Tokyo many years ago, and his first job when he moved there was to teach English in Japan. And they only hired Americans and Brits and Australians. And if you could speak Japanese as well, you didn't get the job.
Okay.
Exactly. They were just trying to force the kids to communicate in English. So they went for those final couple years of, you know, what we would call high school here, they would force the kids into a situation where if they couldn't speak English at all, they weren't going to be able to, you know, communicate at all with the teacher.
Right. And so there's no choice. Yeah. See, that's the thing that doesn't really necessarily happen here, because the English teachers that are available are, you know, their first language is usually French. So they're teaching English as a second language, as also their second language. My oldest has had maybe one or two teachers who have been Anglophones first, or, you know, English speakers first and then French speakers second, which kind of maybe was helped things along on that side. But for the most part, it's been the other way around. My oldest is in high school now, and he had the option of going into an intensive English program in high school, but we kind of left it up to him for what he wanted to do, and he went into sports rather than going to language. So he would have probably had a more difficult time, but a more challenging time in a more focused English environment than he does with sports. But I mean, his grades are so good overall that, I mean, it just didn't really matter at the end.
Right. So now how about college education as far as Canada is concerned? I mean, here, pretty much, you know, a kid has to go into college with 4 years of a language. My children had to take it. None of them are ever really able to speak the languages that they took. My one daughter isn't too bad at ordering drinks in Spanish at the bar, but that's about the limits of that. So
cerveza is an important word to know internationally. I've been to Cuba and the Dominican Republic, and if you know ron and you know cerveza, por favor. That gets
yeah,
you by
that
anywhere.
Was it. We were in the Dominican Republic. Right. So, yeah, just got back
but, a few weeks ago. Yeah, college here is a little different. I mean, it's not this, one of the issues or one of the differences is nationwide is not the same as here in Quebec. And we've got a very particular system. So we have 5 years of high school from grade 7 to grade 11. And then we have 2 years of college before university. So those 2 years are kind of, I don't want to call it an undergrad. I'm trying to think what the equivalent is. It's not a bachelor's degree, but it's you still have to do 2 years of university to get your bachelor's degree. So it's kind of like a pre-degree, but at the same time, it's also kind of like this odd landing spot where after you're done with your 5 years of high school, you kind of have to decide what you're doing next, but you have to kind of do prerequisites before you can actually get a university's degree. So it's kind of this weird kind of in-between thing that the rest of the provinces don't do. So, I mean, a lot of people, what they would do is they would take a bunch of equivalency classes and then shoot over to like a university in Toronto or in Ottawa to do university. So they don't have to do those 2 years. And the other issue here is the way that the language laws are set up. And it's kind of, I don't want to get too political here, but they're kind of run against the grain for people switching languages later in life. So before, if you were going to a French high school, you could go to an English college before going to an English university. Now you can't do that, and you can't do the allowing Francophone kids or French-speaking kids to go to an English college to get them ready for higher education in English at an English university, they kind of trying to get people, trying to discourage people from that. So it's a little, the language issue is a little bit difficult in that sense. But if you go to an English college, you do have a high level of French still to pass. So that's kind of like the added bonus. You do still have some pretty difficult French classes, but there's not that many English universities anyway in Quebec. You really do have to go elsewhere to find them, but okay. we have a handful that are, you know, top notch.
Right. And what's the reasoning behind that? Just to
the idea is, and it's kind of like this push to preserve the French language, because there's a fear that the French language is diminished because of English, just because the worry from parts of the government is that people are going to shy away from using the French language correctly and consume media and start speaking English. But this is an issue that's been going on for many, 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 many years. This predates, you know, anything that I've done. And this is, you know, it's getting into like some nuanced Canadian politics, but it's really for the protection of the French language. There's a worry that the French language is maybe in jeopardy in some situations. It really, in the whole scheme of things, it really is only the island of Montreal that's really primarily the portion of the province that's most divided on language. There's the highest concentration of English speakers are in Montreal. So it's really the only issue is in that area, because as soon as you get outside of that area, everything else is Francophone. So it's not really the reason I say it's not really an issue is because even for my kids, like if I wanted to send them to an English university, eventually I would have to enroll them in English school now. So they would have an eligibility so that I can grandfather my English. How can I say this? I have the right to go to, or I had the right to go to English school, and I have the right to send my kids to English school because I went to English school. But to enforce that right, I have to enroll them into English school so they can continue to have that right. And because I haven't enrolled them into English school, then they don't have the right to education in English later on in life. But the way I see it at the same time is, well, even when they get there, in the area of the province I'm living in, there are no English schools. There is no English higher education where I'm at. So they would have to necessarily move farther away. So it doesn't come into play. So it's kind of a stupid law in that sense. It's really very hard to explain to anywhere else in the world because it's so unique here. It doesn't happen anywhere else. You don't have these issues anywhere else where you're limiting one's ability to learn in the language that they feel free to learn. And immigrants that come into Quebec have to go through French classes. Even if they were English speaking, it doesn't matter. They have to go through French classes so they can learn French. They have to work in French, et cetera. So it's a little restrictive in that way. But at the same time, the province is 90% Francophone and French speaking. So yeah, it's difficult to explain and it's difficult to comprehend a little bit. It goes back very, very far.
We have bizarre little battles that'll occur down here, but you know, when it really comes down to it, I mean, you know, nationwide, you know, you have these pockets of people where they only speak Spanish, or I believe there's an area, Louisiana, where they only speak French.
And, right.
But
that's because of us, though. That's because of us, because there was the Louisiana French are actually Acadians from Eastern Canada,
right,
that were expelled,
right,
because they didn't want to fight. So it's because, right, of us that there's French in Louisiana. But at the same, I mean, it's the only other countries that kind of do come into these kind of like regional disputes and things like that. There's Spain with there's the Catalonia region.
Yes,
that they're trying to separate. It's kind of the same thing where we're in Quebec, we're trying to keep our same French culture, and it's been successful for hundreds of years. So the reason why they're still protecting it is because it's been there for so long, and they've been protecting it for so long that it's just continuing to protect it. The actual threat of, you know, of the English becoming the principal language here is not necessarily a threat. So it's kind of weird, and I don't want to go too far into it, but it's a weird situation, and it doesn't really affect my day-to-day life because I'm fully bilingual, and it doesn't really, I'm not subject to any prejudice or anything like that. And it doesn't affect my children either, because they're, you know, by the time they get to higher education, they're probably going to do it in French anyway, because this is where we live, unless the dreams of my oldest come true and he goes to LSU for football. But that's another story for another day.
There's no special circumstances where, you know, these people don't have to in some way be able to learn English. I mean, all of our founding documents are in English. All of the, you know, our legal documents are in English. All our courts operate in English. And not learning English here is just, nobody's going to give you a hard time for it, but it would really severely hold you back. I mean, if you want to be a doctor or a lawyer or a judge or anything, if you're not able to speak English as well, yeah, you're going to have some issues. And though there are, you know, my wife's mother, her second husband was Spanish speaking, and he used to have an office where he would, in New Jersey, where he would serve just, you know, Spanish speaking people, but that was like a satellite office for him. And he would do that just as kind of a public service type of thing. But here it's more out of, yeah, goodness of your heart. But if you're going to operate a business, you're going to file your taxes. You're going to, it's all done in English. And
the reverse is French. You know, you've got to do it all in French, even if, you know, you're part of the country of Canada, which is primarily English speaking. Quebec has solidified because of, you know, various revolutions and et cetera. We have different civil laws than the rest of the country. Criminal law is all the same across Canada. It's the same criminal law, but civil laws are different in Quebec because we held the same civil laws as in France, and those were retained in, I can't remember which war, 1763 or 1760 or something like that. But these have all been retained generationally, and so the protection of the French language is from generation to generation. But the other thing is, the French that's spoken here is not exactly the same that's spoken in France. So there's small differences between.
So it's a lot like Spanish between Spain and South American countries is
well, yeah, exactly. As well. There's like a dialect, and there's like different words that are used in different ways, and you know, I think the French in France are a little bit more relaxed on the use of certain English loan words than we are here. The loan words are usually a little bit different because there's regional dialects too that kind of change things. So there's regional dialects in France as well, but in Quebec there's regional dialects too. So it kind of not as varied, but there's a little bit of difference. And then if you go farther east in Canada to where my grandfather on my father's side was from, there's even like a French kind of, I don't want to call it a Creole, but there's a language called Chiac, which is a mixture of English and French, which is absolutely impossible to understand. Even if when you speak both languages, your head hurts. Because for me, I'm trying to listen to them, and they have an accent in both languages, and they're saying words in both languages. They both have an accent. Your brain just hurts because you're listening to the French words with an English accent. You're listening to the English words with a French accent, and you're trying to figure out where's this guy from. So it gets pretty funny that way.
It gets back. Yeah. We have a comedian down here. I don't know if you guys see him. And I cannot remember the guy's name, but he makes a joke about it's his grandmother speaking to him in Spanglish. You know, she's just this mix of Spanish and English and flipping back and forth and the different accents. And yeah, right. And he's got this big long routine about it. It's pretty funny to hear. But so that is interesting stuff. I don't want to tear into conjugating verbs or anything like that, but that is pretty interesting.
It does get complicated. And
it's definitely a Bond skill. It's
absolutely, because I mean if I was to go down to Louisiana and to a French speaking part of Louisiana, I mean we'd be able to get through. And if we went to France, it's the same thing. Like my wife is bilingual. She travels a little bit more than me, so she was in Toronto late May, and I mean of course no problems because she speaks English fluently. And then she went to France, and of course she's a francophone, so she's was able to speak fluently there as well. And the same thing would have been for me if I had gone to Toronto. I'd feel right at home, except for, you know, the Maple Leafs being the much hated rivals of my Montreal Canadiens. But then going to France, you know, I would have been able to get by getting, you know, everything I needed. Like there would be the ease of the language would be perfect for me. Now send me to Cuba and I'd be swimming in cigars and beer, but that would be about it. Like I'd be stuck after that.
You can't say, yeah, we were just in Dominican Republic and the resort we were at was, there weren't too many. We've been to Jamaica, Mexico, all these places, and normally most of the people are bilingual, English and Spanish, but this place they were bilingual, but usually it's about 90% of them could speak English. This one, it was about 10% of the people who worked there speak English, so that was a little tough for them, but tough for us, you know, to find a way to communicate. But you know, you point to the menu what you want, and you,
yeah.
But see, I'm lucky because they only had one kind of beer, so I could just say beer.
Oh, the cerveza, and I was you were happy.
And Johnny Walker in Dominican Republic is still Johnny Walker.
Still Johnny Walker. that's all you need. See, my wife is pretty good in conversational Spanish because she actually spent a month in Spain when she was younger. So. When we went to Cuba, that was the tops. Like I was super impressed. Like we had just got married. It was our honeymoon. And I was never been more impressed with my wife because we show up there. It's 2 a.m. and all the bars are closed, but we somehow were able to get beer. So the conversational Spanish just like, you know, kicked in there and we were able to. So right. She's not fluent in Spanish, but she knows enough Spanish that, you know, it was a absolutely Bond skill when you get to be trilingual, when you start getting into those third languages. And I think the language that's most useful for a Bond fan, I think it probably would be Spanish, because if you're going into the Caribbean, you need English, you need Spanish. French is a little, it would be useful, but you know, there's not much tourism to do in Haiti. And then after that, you would have Martinique and Guadeloupe, that if you were going there, yes, French would be a bonus. But if you're going to the touristy spots, they're probably speaking English anyway. So I think for a Bond fan, you'd probably want to chalk up on your Spanish, or, you know, depending on which way you're going, you're Russian. So I don't know. Depends what your mission is.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, where you're headed. Well, later this year, we're headed to Greece and Egypt and Israel and Turkey. So I'm not going to be able to talk to anybody. But so we'll see how smoothly that goes. But
right.
Anything else you'd like to add before we sign off here?
You know what? Not necessarily. I think that you know, French is one of those languages that I mean, that Bond spoke fluently. His mother was Swiss French, so I mean, he kind of probably got that a little bit from her. You were saying before that the, you know, you had you know, relatives that that had, you know, Spanish speaking father, and then he lost Spanish. I find that to be like the kind of downside of things. I think if you have the opportunity to learn another language and speak it fluently, and it's part of your heritage, then you should be able to speak it fluently. You should push forward on that. And if you're want to learn a language, you know, fully commit to it. But when you're fully committing to it, make sure the pronunciation is correct, because that could change everything. And just keep at it. I mean, it's immerse yourself in it. The only way you're gonna learn, and the best way that I've seen people learn, you know, from Francophones learning English and things like that, is immersing yourself into it fully. You know, people who have moved from one area. I've seen people who have moved from here to go and spend 2 years out west in Western Canada to learn English. Best thing for you to do is immerse yourself in the culture, force yourself to learn it every day. And like we were saying with the Japanese teachers too, it's the same thing. Like, you don't give them the opportunity to fall back on something else. You have to learn the language, because you're there, and they're not going to speak to you in another language. They're going to speak to you in one language, and that's the language you have to learn. So I think if anyone's thinking of learning a second language, go at it, you know, head first, and immerse yourself in it.
Yeah, I know my brother-in-law's case, a lot of it was, you know, it was just his father. He didn't really have the opportunity to speak Spanish to that many other people. And I know my wife's family, they're from Slovakia. And so her grandmother had the ability to speak Slovak. And her father, you know, knew some phrases and stuff like that. And my wife might know two or three words. And I think you kind of immerse yourself. But if you stay too long, you start to lose the old.
Yeah.
And as generations go by, it gets replaced with the new. Yeah.
Yeah. It was important for my kids to learn English, because, you know, my parents only speak English, and even my brother and my sister speak primarily English. I know they speak pretty good French, but not as good as French as me. And it was important for them, for my kids, to be able to speak both languages, because, you know, you're going to be able to communicate with, you know, grandma and grandpa in English, and I wasn't in a position to have them learn only English either. So it was important for them to learn both. And I mean, they've passed with flying colors. They're all fully bilingual. So I mean, they go anywhere in life, and they've got no issues. I mean, my son, he's now a bat boy for the local baseball team. But for years and years and years, he's been talking to all the ball players in English. He's just missing his Spanish to get, you know, some of those the Dominicans.
The middle infielder, the shortstop.
Yeah, exactly. He's already friends with, you know, their power hitter, and he's a great guy. But you know, the pitch pictures and all that he hasn't spoken to him in Spanish yet. He's got to learn that Spanish to be able to get to them. But he'll walk into the dressing room, and he's not even, like, you know, bothering with the French Canadian guys. He's going up to the American guys. Hey, how's it going? What you doing? And,
Well, thanks for doing this, man. I love to when I'm going to bring up a topic, if I can find a resource that knows a heck of a lot more about it than I do, that's always great for the podcast. I really appreciate you doing this.
Happy to share my experiences, bud.
Thanks.
Take care.
You're gonna make it to Gatherall?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I probably won't. It's you know what? I talk baseball, but it's a really busy season for me this summer. I've got it's all week. Like I've got barely. This is one of the few days where I don't have something going on with baseball. We just finished a big weekend, and we got another big one coming up. So unfortunately, travel for me this year is gonna be a no. If anyone wants to come with me to Disney in next November, that's where I'm going.
Pop down there. Right. So, well, you know, there is a Von Car Museum down there in Orlando. But
Yeah. And I was a day trip to Saratoga was something that interests me, because Saratoga is, if you remember from Spy Love Me, the novel, she goes from Quebec City and she drives down the scooter all the way down to Lake George. Lake George is not that far from the border. Montreal to Lake George is probably, Montreal to Plattsburgh is, on a good day, probably an hour and a quarter, hour and a half, maybe.
You're that close to Saratoga?
From Montreal to Saratoga is probably 2 hours, honestly. For me, it's an extra hour, you're closer, 2.5 hours.
Okay, Tony, you're still closer than I am.
But for Matt and Edgar, I think they had been thinking of it, and Matt and Edgar are a good 2 hours away from Saratoga. It's a quick trip into upstate New York. They're not that far. I'm a little bit farther, because for me to go directly south to the States, we'd be going through northern Maine, or we'd have to cut west to get through Vermont and New Hampshire. So I've done New Hampshire before from Quebec City, and that was about 5 or 6 hours down to Hampton Beach.
Okay.
So that was maybe a 5.5-6 hour stretch. So it's not too bad, but no, upstate New York from Montreal is 2 hours by car, like super easy.
Wow. So yeah, actually, Mike Poplowski, Culture Bond, and I are talking about trying to find a weekend and do Saratoga.
Yeah, talk to Matt and Edgar. I think they would be they'd be into it. And I think I know that Jason Kim was interested in doing it as well. So I don't know where he's at with that. But it's a quick drive from Montreal. I don't know how open they are to doing it this summer, but yeah, they'd be down.
Yeah, I'll loop you guys in. Actually, I'm supposed to see Jason in a couple of weeks, so I'll bring it up with him. He has family in this area where I'm at, not far. So he comes into town every now and then, and we usually try to meet up and get beers or something. So, but well, thank you for coming on the Bond Brain, man. It's always great to talk to you. And this is Bud West and Emery Cormier signing off here, folks. And the Bond Brain will return.
Salut, à la prochaine.